This is Valley of Genius, Episode 1, Steve Wozniak.
I had two goals in life. One was to be an engineer, and the second was to be a fifth grade teacher.
I'd like to welcome you to a brand new podcast on the TWiT Network. A few weeks ago, I interviewed Adam Fisher. He's the author of a new book called Valley of Genius, The Uncensored History of Silicon Valley. It, as told by the people who actually lived it, the hackers, the founders, the freaks who made it boom, we hit it off. And Adam and I thought it'd be kind of fun. The book is written form, but Adam has interviewed more than 200 people, thousands of hours of audio from some of the most important people in Silicon Valley. And I thought, well, that's a podcast, right?
Sure is. It sure is.
I mean, why not let people hear these people's voices? How did you get these people to talk to you?
You know, there's this amazing technology called email.
You really just emailed them?
And I just emailed them. And what is amazing, you know, I got a lot of no's. But what's amazing is some of them said yes because I just, you know.
You just asked.
I just asked.
Some of these guys, nobody's asked them in a while, right? So, and some of these guys, we're going to talk to somebody a little later on in the series who is the third founder of Google that no one ever heard of.
And I don't believe anybody's talked to him before.
Exactly. He's probably thrilled.
Yeah.
Adam's well known. He has written for Wired, the MIT Technology Review, the New York Times Sunday Magazine. So it's not like you were somebody out of nowhere, but still. So I thought we'd start with kind of one of the most important early day hackers in the industry. And of course, it's got to be Steve Wozniak, the engineer's engineer.
Yeah, he is the epitome of hacker. You know, he was basically Stephen Levy's inside source when he wrote the book Hackers.
No kidding, I didn't know that. Because it's
right.
Not about Woz, it's about the MIT hackers and
yeah,
Richard Stallman and people like that.
Yeah,
but Woz knew all about it.
Yeah, you know, the book came out right before the Macintosh was released, so I don't think Levy really understood the importance of Woz at that time. But yeah, he was whispering in Levy's ear the whole time.
Tell me, set the scene. Where did you talk to Woz?
So I emailed Woz, and he wanted to meet at the Hickory Pit Barbecue.
He loves that place.
Yeah, it's like
down in San Jose.
It's a diner.
He eats there all the time.
All the time.
In fact, I know because I follow him on Foursquare, and he checks in there like every day. So did you?
Yeah. We had breakfast, and when you hear these clips, you'll hear the clattering of coffee cups, and he really opened up to me.
Steve didn't even want to start a computer company when we started Apple. I don't know if you ever got that out. First of all, people like think, oh, Steve was into computers, what they would do for people someday was his whole life. Never talked like that. I was at the Homebrew Computer Club. Steve never attended. He'd never been there. He was up in Oregon. I had built a computer. I had given it away for free to everybody at the club. I had helped others build it. I was a hero at the club. Steve came into town. I said, you got to come down and see this.
Jobs got a job at Atari.
That's right. Woz was at HP. Jobs dropped out of Reed, got a job at Atari. The ad was, you know, have fun, make money.
Steve liked that second part.
Steve was employee number 19.
Wow.
And Woz, and he was just basically a tech. He was soldering up circuit boards and causing trouble, actually. And he got switched over to the night, like he was a night tech, so that his supervisor didn't have to deal with him.
Or smell him. His personal hygiene was notoriously bad. He thought because he had a vegan diet that he didn't have body odor.
He was a fruitarian at the time.
Not even vegan, just fruit.
And he would unlock the kind of factory floor at night and let Woz in because Woz was obsessed with this early Atari game called Grand Trek 10, I think. Maybe 20. It was a driving game.
I saw it in an arcade. I did a copy of Pong in 28 chips, and two of the chips put a four-letter word on when you missed the ball. So I'm into humor. And I showed it to my friends at Hewlett-Packard all the time, and then Steve came into town, and he saw it. And he took my board down to Atari, and he got a job there. And I don't know if he was telling them that he had designed it or he and another guy had designed it or what, but I'm sure they were impressed by it because they considered... He was trying to talk them into using it for their first home Pong game. Sell it to people in the home. And they made the right decision.
So Jobs comes to Woz and says, you want to make a little money?
Yes. And this is not the first time that that was said. Before that was, of course, the blue box, phone freaking thing. And this was his next one. Yeah, make a little money.
Well, breakup was hardware. Okay. I could tell the story. Steve came to me and said, Nolan Bushnell wants a game. Here's how it works. Can you do it? Oh, I would love to do it. Can you do it in 4 days? Nobody can do it in 4 days. This is a half a man year, months of prototyping work. And I was the hottest designer in the world. I did not think I could do it. And I said, I'll try. And I stayed up 4 days and nights and did it. That's... What happened was Steve said, if it's under 50, he asked me how many chips my design was at first. And I said, it looks like 45 chips. And he said, I realized it was a management technique. I smile at it now. It was really good. But he said, yes, if we get it under 50 chips, we get $700. But if we get it under 40 chips, we get $1,000. He was motivating me to get it down. I got it down as low as 42, but by the time we finished, it was back up to 45. And Steve may have even added a sound chip after I left the last morning to make it 46 or something. But, so he wrote me a personal check for $350, half of the 700. And it was, I think, 12 years later. I brought Andy and Bill Atkinson and Burl Smith. I think that was all of them. Then Andy on the plane came and he said, yeah, he'd read this book about Atari. I said, oh, it probably says how I did Breakout. And he says, yeah, that was in there. I was proud. And I said, yeah, we got paid $700. And he says, it said you got paid thousands. And then he brought the book over to me. And I was crying. I'm almost crying now. Because you know what? I'm the sort of person that anyone who knows me, Steve could have come to me and said, I need all the money to buy into a commune up in Oregon. Can I keep all the money? I would have said, yes. Absolutely. I have a job as an engineer.
So that you, Adam, actually got Woz to say something that he has been unwilling to say for decades, which is that for a long time he said, oh, no, Steve didn't get paid more than he said. And finally, he admitted that Jobs kind of ripped off his buddy. I never had heard him say that.
And Woz, you talk to him, and over the years he's been asked about this, and he says, oh, friendship is more important than money. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I think now that Jobs has died, the truth has come out, and he really unloaded.
Here's a visit with Woz and the early days of Apple. We take you back to, what is it called, the Hickory Wagon?
The Hickory Pit.
The Hickory Pit.
Okay, in the garage, we never talked about what a product could be, what we might build. We never did any engineering design in the garage, any drafting. We never did any prototyping of building early machines, the first machines. We never did any manufacturing in the garage. Steve did the business in his bedroom. He'd get on the phone and order parts and sales, and eventually got a super long line he could drag out to the garage. We only needed the garage for about a couple of hours a week. Almost never were any people in the garage, very few, one or two just sitting there for fun, but nothing to do. Once a week, we'd drive down and pick up the computers were manufactured somewhere else in Santa Clara. We'd pick them up and drive maybe 20 of them to the garage. And then we'd plug each of the 20 in IKEA style to keyboards and all, make sure they worked, put them in white boxes, and then Steve would drive the white boxes to the bike store where Paul Terrell would pay cash because we had no money. So that's one thing Steve was good at. Use whatever you can, So we would get the parts on credit. We'd owe a lot of money in 30 days, but we'd get paid cash at the store. So the garage was really... You think that, oh, we had desks, and a bunch of people were there, and we had the things that companies have. No, it was just a house, because when you have no money, you start in your house. So the garage represents our humility. It's an accurate representation. It's accurate to say we started in a garage, because we started with nothing. You had to use your house. I was telling Steve what the social good of computers would be, and he suggested we make a company. He had had jobs at Haltech Electronics selling parts. You buy a switch for 1 cent and you sell it for $6. He knew how to do that. He was on the phone. I saw him do deals like that. And he said, we'll make a PC board for $20 and sell it for $40. That's a part. It's not even a computer. Paul Terrell at the bike shop believed in we should make full computer boards, the full thing. And we didn't own the rights to it. I'd given it away for free, no copyrights or anything. And that was the Apple One. The Apple Two was very open. It's 100%. 100% open so that hundreds of thousands of people could young people with not much money could create hardware and software additions to it. A nine-year-old person could write a program saying vertical equals one, vertical equals two, vertical equals three, and make things move on a screen.
So I've known Waz for some time. I consider him a friend. I've spent time with him. He's one of the sweetest guys you have ever met. And unfortunately, he'll say yes to almost anything. He's got a good partner now. His wife, Janet, will keep him out of trouble and will block anybody who wants to take advantage of him. But you asked him something I don't know if anybody's ever asked him. What he really wanted to be in life?
I had two goals in life. One was to be an engineer, and the second was to be a fifth-grade teacher. And I did that for 8 years. Kind of secret from the press. But I drove him for 2 hours up to Cotati, California to see this woman, Liza Loop, who would push in a computer that she had gotten on a grant from Digital Equipment Corporation. It's like a PDP. She'd push it into elementary schools.
Adam Fisher, if you want to read more, the book is Valley of Genius, The Uncensored History of Silicon Valley, as told to Adam. And you can get a copy if you go to his website, valleyofgenius.com/twit. Adam, we're going to do more of this because I find it so interesting to hear these people in their real voices. Next time, Stuart Brand.
My hero and the guy who coined the phrase personal computer, Stuart Brand.
We'll see you next week on Valley of Genius.
I like to joke that Steve Jobs and I started the company thinking we wanted to make blind people equal to normal sighted people. And we succeeded because everywhere you go, people are looking down at their cell phones texting. They don't see a thing around them. They're blind.